I have been very, very much concerned for some time in the excessive use of four-letter words and swearing in our meetings. Now, if I am listening to a chap or a girl who is new with us and has probably just come out of the gutter, I find it don't offend me at all to hear them using that gutter language. But if they've been around us long enough to get the feel of this program and to see that it is a spiritual way of life, and that gutter language has no place in it, and they persist in using it, it offends me badly. It offends me badly. I even talk about it sometimes in young people's conferences. Now, they are not the only ones that abuse this deal, but they're most likely to do so. And I think that mainly, after they've been in a while, they use these words for shock, you know, the shock value. And I don't like it. I think that it's something that we should instruct our secretaries to do a little sorting out on our speakers. I think we should have a... Well, let's go back. 30 years ago in Beverly Hills, we had a policy. 30 years ago. And we read it at the meetings that we wanted to keep down profanity to a minimum. And we didn't think it had any place in our way of life. And, of course, at that time, we weren't hearing so many of the four-letter words that we hear today. They offend me greatly. I don't think they belong in our way of life at all. And I've been encouraged a little bit because one of our most common misusers at the podium. He's not so young anymore, but he's sort of a favorite of younger people. At the last young people's convention down south, he came to me and said he was going to come down and see if I could help him clean up his vocabulary. Well, I think that would be a real opportunity because he is sort of a leader. And if he starts cutting it out, I think that a lot of our people down there will follow. But it don't belong with our way of life. It just does not belong with our way of life. And I think that we can, as groups, see to it that our speakers are instructed not to do that. Now, just for a second, and this is too long, but this is a very, very important thing in my way of thinking. We had a little girl, I heard her name mentioned here today, that talked at the Desert Roundup not too long ago, maybe 3 years ago. And she was an instant success. Everybody fell in love with her. And she started doing a lot of talking. And the first thing you know, she was doing a lot of, using a lot of bad language. And she went to Honolulu and used a lot of bad language, but she got a standing ovation. and it damn near killed her. She's been coming to me now for some time to try to re-find herself. You see what we're talking about? It just don't do it. It just don't do it. And if we're going to grow in this thing, which is inevitable if we do it right. It's inevitable if we do it right. If we're going to grow, we're going to have to cut it out. And if we don't cut it out, we're not going to stay. I think that's it.
Do you think Al-Anon should stress and discuss the disease part about hope?
I don't think we need to stress it too much, but there is a chapter in our book about that big, black, blue and white, called Alateen Al-Anon Family Groups at Work. There is the most beautiful description in there that I have ever heard of the disease of alcoholism. In our meeting in Laguna Beach, we read that every meeting. Now, that's because that meeting is a big meeting. We have between 45 and 50 at that meeting every Monday. And we also read the other part of it, which is the non-alcoholic's experience during the drinking years. And that one follows my pattern right down the line. It's my story. It's just my story, that's all. And the one on alcoholism is as I viewed Chuck's story. And I think that that is sufficient, because if we spend our time in our Al-Anon meetings talking about the disease and trying to find out what makes it work and why it ticks and why they have it, we're not going to do very much work on ourselves and our own peace and our own joy and our own serenity. We're there to better ourselves. We're there to take our eye off the alcoholic and do something about us. And if we do too much talking about the disease of alcoholism and the whys and the wherefores, there won't be much time for self-improvement.
Thank you. What do you think, Chuck, of dual problems, pills and alcohol, coming to AA, especially when no NA exists in the area?
You did say dual problems.
Right.
Any alcoholic is welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter how many other hang-ups he has. They might be dual and they might be quadruple, you know. But we think in our part of the country, and I think it's the position of Alcoholics Anonymous, that it's perfectly all right for a person who comes in to participate in our meetings, if they're open meetings, participate in discussions, if they are open discussions, but they can announce, I'm an alcoholic and a pillhead or an addict or what have you. But when they proceed to talk, they talk about alcoholism. Alcoholism. This is what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. We have only one purpose. And insofar as I am able to perceive, nobody is entitled to a microphone in Alcoholics Anonymous but an alcoholic. I don't care who he is. Now, in a special meeting that's so known to be a special meeting, I think we can have others. but not in a regular AA meeting. The only person that's entitled to the microphone or to the floor is an alcoholic. And he can admit other hang-ups, but he don't talk about it. He don't talk about it, because that isn't it. Now, the wonder of wonders is this, that if we practice the 12 steps of our program honestly for alcoholism, the program takes care of the other hang-ups, too. The program of recovery, or the formula for recovery in alcoholism, is also the formula for the good life and the formula for self-discovery. For self-discovery, the same program. But it don't happen usually unless we apply the program to ourselves for our number one problem, which is alcoholism. If we get too many conditions on sobriety, we usually don't get it, you know. But if we practice the program honestly for sobriety, it takes care of a lot of other things without even having to mention them.
Thank you. Both of you answered this. How can we get more participation of Alateen state and local level?
Well, I think that the Alateens themselves have more interest in getting the other people that are needed, that need the program. In Southern California, for many years now, at their yearly
SCAP
conference, Chuck and I were privileged to go a couple of years ago and be the banquet speakers there, and there were 400 young people there with the most beautiful weekend that I think I've ever had the privilege of experiencing. And I think possibly it's just exactly like AA and Al-Anon, that the only way we can get new people is by example, possibly, and by these young people talking to each other when they know that one of their friends, for instance, has a problem in their family. I don't know of any other way. They're doing an awful lot of stuff in the newspapers and magazines and things nowadays that is making it better known all the time. How much good that will do, I have no way of knowing, except that we probably will have an influx of people since these radio and television programs have been on. I don't know of any other way. Maybe Chuck has an answer to that.
Chuck, any comment?
Well, the Alateen program actually is a portion of Al-Anon. It isn't much. I mean, our program, Alcoholics Anonymous, is not so much involved in it. Individually, however, I have been involved in it ever since it started. I had the wonderful privilege of going to North Battleford, Saskatchewan, a few years back, to an all-province Alateen weekend. And they had 1,500 kids there. And if you don't think we had our time here, it's fantastic. So I think that all we need to do is give them our support wherever we can. And they'll take care of it pretty good on their own.
The thing we mainly need in Alateen are sponsors, and that's the hardest thing we have to get.
Chuck, do Do you feel that the saying, never refuse an AA request, is a valid truth, or are there times when we have to come first and then do the request as willingly as we are able?
I think that is a low blow. I don't think there's any rules to follow in this thing at all. This same chap that I told you about, he said he was going to come down and see if we could change his vocabulary a little bit. Said to me first, this was his first question. He says, I've had a law for some time. When I get 6 dates in a month, I close the month. And he says, what do you do about that? And I said, when a calendar's full, I close the month. I also told him that the busy man has time for everything. It's the guy that ain't doing nothing that hasn't got any time, you know. So I don't find it necessary ever to not do what I can on any call that's made. I don't know, I don't find it necessary to duck them at all. I have done this in recent years. I cut off my phone at midnight. Now, I didn't used to do that, but I demand a little bit more sleep than I used to. You see, I finished my 75th year some little while back. And so I don't keep the phone on from midnight on. I think that if they're blasted till midnight, they'll last till daylight. But I think it's every person's answer. I don't believe you can make any laws. I think that I let's put it like this. I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love its people. And it's no chore for me to give my time and energy to it. If I didn't have the demand on my time that you people put on it now that I'm not in the business world anymore, I'd go out and get a job. I don't need a job anymore than I have, but I'd get a job if you people didn't keep me busy. So I love it, and I'll keep doing it as long as I live. And it's not a chore at all. It's no big deal, okay.
Nelson, did you have resentments at the amount of time Chuck spent away from the responsibility of home after coming to AA? How did you resolve that?
We would be here all night. That's no joke. Oh, God. That was the biggest hurdle, I think, that I had to accomplish. And it took me quite a few years. I think the people coming in today have a better chance than I had, because I didn't think for so long that there was anything wrong with me anyway. I was such a good woman, you know. And when we moved to Laguna Beach, Chuck's business was still in Los Angeles. And as he just told you, he talks every time he's asked to talk, which is quite often. And I sat down there in Laguna in my new dream house, high on a hill with a perfectly beautiful view and no husband good part of the time. And there was no Al-Anon in Laguna. There was very little in Orange County at that time. Two meetings that I knew of. I didn't like one, and the other one was too far to go, I thought. And so I just sat there and got sorrier and sorrier for myself and got pretty sick. And that's one of the hurdles that I mentioned a while ago. I think one of the things we're going to have to realize is this. Do we want him drunk or do we want him sober? If we want him sober, we have to be willing to allow him or her, whichever the case may be, to do whatever is necessary for them in this program. But then the thing that I found out for myself was that I had to get busy and do something in my own program that kept me busy enough so that I wasn't feeling so lonely and so left out. I think that's the only answer, as far as I know. Because I found, the funny part of it is, I thought I was so terribly left out if I couldn't go to every meeting with him. And for a long time now, I have found out that I don't want to go to a lot of those meetings. I'm enjoying staying at home, being by myself for a change. And it's a total switch from the way I used to feel. And I can't explain it to you. It's something that came very slowly and very gradually as I found the need to find some answers for myself.
Let me steal one of her best lines. She had a gal down in Balboa that was living with a practicing alcoholic. And she was spending a lot of Al-Anon. And one night after a ruckus, this guy says to her, "Why do you think they have to go to all these meetings anyway?" And she says, "I'll tell you why." She says, "I'm going to these meetings to find out how to keep from killing you, you son of a bitch."
Now, very good language.
That's what she said.
You weren't supposed to use that kind of language.
That's a quote.
How can I help to ensure that our fellowship will never wither or fade away?
Oh, wow.
That is a tremendous question. It's one that I have been wrestling with for several years. Because there is so much happening in the field of alcoholism today that I would sort of prefer it wasn't happening. Alcoholism has become a very popular disease. We get now in our newspapers down there some PhD discussing some phase of our problem. In just about every issue of the paper that comes out. Most of them not discussing anything about our program at all. That is alcoholism, you know. And we have so many of our people who are becoming paid counselors and employees of the various agencies. Now, I'm not sitting up here saying that I don't think our people are entitled to make a living. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying this, that having been in position to watch this happen for a period of years, I find that many of our people who were leaders a dozen years ago are now professionals. They're professionals. They can't even make an A talk anymore. They make a good talk, but it's a professional talk. And I don't like that. And of course, I've given it much thought. And here was the answer I came up with. This year already. Because I was I was concerned, deeply concerned about it. And enough so that I had to find an answer for myself. So I took time out and I looked the whole situation over. Saw it for what it was and for what I might possibly be able to do about it, which is very little. But this is the thing that freed me up, that makes it easy for me to live now with me and you. I sat with myself long enough to come to see that if every one of you, every other member of Alcoholics Anonymous, all of you who are members of Alcoholics Anonymous, became paid employees of some agency in alcoholism. I have been very, very much concerned for some time in the excessive use of four-letter words and swearing in our meetings. Now, if I am listening to chap or a girl who is new with us and has probably just come out of the gutter, I find it don't offend me at all to hear them using that gutter language. But if they've been around us long enough to get the feel of this program and to see that it is a spiritual way of life, and that gutter language has no place in it, and they persist in using it, it offends me badly. It offends me badly. I even talk about it sometimes in young people's conferences. Now, they are not the only ones that abuse this deal, but they're most likely to do so. And I think that mainly, after they've been in a while, they use these words for shock. You know, the shock value. And I don't like it. I think that it's something that we should instruct our secretaries to do a little sorting out. On our speakers, I think we should let's go back. 30 years ago in Beverly Hills, we had a policy. 30 years ago. And we read it at the meetings that we wanted to keep down profanity to a minimum. And we didn't think it had any place in our way of life. And, of course, at that time, we weren't hearing so many of the four-letter words that we hear today. They offend me greatly. I don't think they belong in our way of life at all. And I've been encouraged a little bit because one of our most common misusers of the podium He's not so young anymore, but he's a sort of a favorite of younger people. At the last young people's convention down south, he came to me and said he was going to come down and see if I could help him clean up his vocabulary. Well, I think that'd be a real opportunity because he is sort of a leader. And if he starts cutting it out, I think that a lot of our people down there will follow. But it don't belong with our way of life. It just does not belong with our way of life. And I think that we can, as groups, see to it that our speakers are instructed not to do that. Now, just for a second, and this is too long, but this is a very, very important thing in my way of thinking. We had a little girl, I heard her name mentioned here today, that talked at the Desert Roundup not too long ago, maybe 3 years ago. And she was an instant success. Everybody fell in love with her. And she started doing a lot of talking. And the first thing you know, she was doing a lot of, using a lot of bad language. And she went to Honolulu and used a lot of bad language, but she got a standing ovation. And it damn near killed her. She's been coming to me now for some time to try to re-find herself. You see what we're talking about? It's, it just don't do it. It just don't do it. And if we're going to grow in this thing, which is inevitable if we do it right, it's inevitable if we do it right. If we're going to grow, we're going to have to cut it out, and if we don't cut it out, we're not going to stay. I think that's it.
Elsa, do you think Alamon should stress and discuss the disease part about hope?
I don't think we need to stress it too much, but there is a chapter in our book, it's about that big, black, blue and white, called Alateen Al-Anon Family Groups at Work. There is the most beautiful description in there that I have ever heard of the disease of alcoholism. In our meeting in Laguna Beach, we read that every meeting. Now, that's because that meeting is a big meeting. We have between 45 and 50 at that meeting every Monday. And we also read the other part of it, which is the non-alcoholic's experience during the drinking years. And that one follows my pattern right down the line. It's my story. It's just my story, that's all. And the one on alcoholism is as I viewed Chuck's story. And I think that that is sufficient, because if we spend our time in our Al-Anon meetings talking about the disease and trying to find out what makes it work and why it ticks and why they have it, we're not going to do very much work on ourselves and our own peace and our own joy and our own serenity. We're there to better ourselves. We're there to take our eye off the alcoholic and do something about us. And if we do too much talking about the disease of alcoholism and the whys and the wherefores, there won't be much time for self-improvement.
Thank you. What do you think, Chuck, of dual problems, pills and alcohol, coming to AA? especially when no NA exists in the area.
You did say dual problems. Any alcoholic is welcome in Alcoholics Anonymous, no matter how many other hang-ups he has. They might be dual and they might be quadruple, you know. But we think in our part of the country, and I think it's the position of Alcoholics Anonymous, that it's perfectly all right for a person who comes in to participate in our meetings, if they're open meetings, participate in discussions, if they are open discussions, but they can announce, I'm an alcoholic, an appeal head, or an addict, or what have you. But when they proceed to talk, they talk about alcoholism. Alcoholism. This is what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. We have only one purpose. And insofar as I am able to perceive, nobody is entitled to a microphone in Alcoholics Anonymous but an alcoholic. I don't care who he is. Now, in a special meeting that's so known to be a special meeting, I think we can have others. But not in a regular AA meeting. The only person that's entitled to the microphone or to the floor is an alcoholic. And he can admit other hang-ups, but he don't talk about it. He don't talk about it, because that isn't it. Now, the wonder of wonders is this, that if we practice the 12 steps of our program honestly for alcoholism, the program takes care of the other hang-ups too. The program of recovery, or the formula for recovery in alcoholism, is also the formula for the good life and the formula for self-discovery. For self-discovery, the same program. But it don't happen usually unless we apply the program to ourselves for our number one problem, which is alcoholism. If we get too many conditions on sobriety, we usually don't get it, you know. But if we practice the program honestly for sobriety, it takes care of a lot of other things without even having to mention them.
Thank you. Both of you answer this. How can we get more participation of Alateen, state, and local level?
Well, I think that the Alateens themselves have more interest in getting the other people that are needed, that need the program. In Southern California, for many years now, at their yearly
SCAT
conference, Chuck and I were privileged to go a couple of years ago and be the banquet speakers there, and there were 400 young people there with the most beautiful weekend that I think I've ever had the privilege of experiencing. And I think possibly it's just exactly like AA and Al-Anon that we, the only way we can get new people is by example, possibly, and by these young people talking to each other when they know that one of their friends, for instance, has a problem in their family. I don't know of any other way. They're doing an awful lot of stuff in the newspapers and magazines and things nowadays that is making it better known all the time. How much good that will do, I have no way of knowing, except that we probably will have an influx of people since these radio and television programs have been on. I don't know of any other way. Maybe Chuck has an answer to that.
Chuck, any comment?
Well, the Alateen program actually is a portion of Al-Anon. It isn't much. I mean, our program, Alcoholics Anonymous, is not so much involved in it. Individually, however, I have been involved in it ever since it started. I had the wonderful privilege of going to North Battleford, Saskatchewan, a few years back, to an all-province Alateen weekend. And they had 1,500 kids there. And if you don't think we had our time here... it's fantastic. So, I think that all we need to do is give them our support wherever we can. And they'll take care of it pretty good on their own.
The thing we mainly need in Alateen are sponsors, and that's the hardest thing we have to get.
Chuck, do you feel that the saying, never refuse an AA request, is a valid truth, or are there times when we have to come first and then do the request as willingly as we are able?
I think that is a low blow. I don't think there's any rules to follow in this thing at all. This same chap that I told you about, he said he was going to come down and see if we could change his vocabulary a little bit. Said to me first, this was his first question, he says, I've had a law for some time. When I get 6 dates in a month, I close the month. And he says, what do you do about that? And I said, when the calendar's full, I close the month. I also told him that the busy man has time for everything. It's the guy that ain't doing nothing that hasn't got any time, you know. So I don't find it necessary ever to not do what I can on any call that's made. I don't know, I don't find it necessary to duck them at all. I have done this in recent years. I cut off my phone at midnight. Now, I didn't used to do that, but I demand a little bit more sleep than I used to. You see, I finished my 75th year some little while back. And so I don't keep the phone on from midnight on. I think that if they've lasted till midnight, they'll last till daylight. But I think it's every person's answer. Doctor. I don't believe you can make any laws. I think that, let's put it like this. I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love its people. And it's no chore for me to give my time and energy to it. If I didn't have the demand on my time that you people put on it now that I'm not in the business world anymore, I'd go out and get a job. I don't need a job anymore than I have, but I'd get a job if you people didn't keep me busy. So, I love it, and I'll keep doing it as long as I live. And it's not a chore at all. It's no big deal. Okay.
Nelson, did you have resentments at the amount of time Chuck spent away from the responsibility of home after coming to AA? How did you resolve that?
We would be here all night. That's no joke. Oh, God. That was the biggest hurdle, I think, that I had to accomplish. And it took me quite a few years. I think the people coming in today have a better chance than I had, because I didn't think for so long that there was anything wrong with me. Anyway, I was such a good woman, you know. And when we moved to Laguna Beach, Chuck's business was still in Los Angeles, and as he just told you, he talks every time he's asked to talk, which is quite often. And I sat down there in Laguna in my new dream house, high on a hill with a perfectly beautiful view, and no husband, good part of the time. And there was no Al-Anon in Laguna. There was very little in Orange County at that time. Two meetings that I knew of. I didn't like one, and the other one was too far to go, I thought. And so I just sat there and got sorrier and sorrier for myself. And got pretty sick. Pretty sick. And that's one of the hurdles that I mentioned a while ago. I think one of the things we're going to have to realize is this. Do we want him drunk or do we want him sober? If we want him sober, we have to be willing to allow him or her, whichever the case may be, to do whatever is necessary for them in this program. But then the thing that I found out for myself was that I had to get busy and do something in my own program that kept me busy enough so that I wasn't feeling so lonely and so left out. I think that's the only answer, as far as I know. Because I found, the funny part of it is, I thought I was so terribly left out if I couldn't go to every meeting with him. And for a long time now, I have found out that I don't want to go to a lot of those meetings. I'm enjoying staying at home, being by myself for a change. And it's a total switch from the way I used to feel. And I can't explain it to you. It's something that came very slowly and very gradually as I found the need to find some answers for myself.
Let me steal one of her best lines. She had a gal down in Balboa that was living with a practicing alcoholic. She was attending a lot of Al-Anon. And one night after a ruckus, this guy says to her, "Why do you think they have to go to all these meetings anyway?" And she says, "I'll tell you why." She says, "I'm going to these meetings to find out how to keep from killing you, you son of a bitch."
Now, very good language.
That's what she said. That's what she
you
said.
You weren't supposed to use that kind of language.
That's a quote.
to ensure that our fellowship will never wither or fade away.
Wow.
That is a tremendous question. It's one that I have been wrestling with for several years. Because there is so much happening in the field of alcoholism today that I would sort of prefer it wasn't happening. Alcoholism has become a very popular disease. We get now in our newspapers down there some PhD discussing some phase of our problem. In just about every issue of the paper that comes out. Most of them not discussing anything about our program at all. That is alcoholism, you know. And we have so many of our people who are becoming paid counselors and employees of the various agencies. Now, I'm not sitting up here saying that I don't think our people are entitled to make a living. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying this. That having been in position to watch this happen for a period of years, I find that many of our people who were leaders a dozen years ago are now professionals. They're professionals. They can't even make an AA talk anymore. They make a good talk, but it's a professional talk. And I don't like that. And of course, I've given it much thought. And here was the answer I came up with. This year already. Because I was, I was concerned. Deeply concerned about it. And enough so that I had to find an answer for myself. So I took time out and I looked the whole situation over. Saw it for what it was and for what I might possibly be able to do about it, which is very little. But this is the thing that freed me up, that makes it easy for me to live now with me and you. I sat with myself long enough to come to see that if every one of you, every other member of Alcoholics Anonymous, all of you who are members of Alcoholics Anonymous became paid employees of some agency in alcoholism.
Wow. I am Elsa, and I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. Hi. That's a dilly to hand me for the first one. How is it necessary? Well, all I can tell you is what my own experience was. I thought I had a pretty good idea of a higher power before I ever met my husband. But during the drinking years, somewhere along the line, I lost contact with that power completely. And I can't remember during that time of ever really going to my higher power for help. Except to say, oh God, what can I do to get out of this thing? But after sobriety and after Al-Anon, it took me so long to find myself after Chuck got sober, because you see, there was no Al-Anon when he sobered up. And I went to AA meetings with him for 6 years before Al-Anon was born. And during that time, I learned a great deal about this program. I had a lot of answers up in my head. But I took a terrific hurting on my part, and I came time to go into the story, but I had to hurt like hell before I could come to the place where I could then try to find a higher power again for myself. And sometimes I think it's very difficult because we have all kinds and descriptions in this program. Those who have a religious belief and those who have none. And I think that the greatest story that I ever heard along this line was from an AA gal who said when she came to AA that she was an agnostic or an atheist and that she didn't know how to find a higher power. And she went home that night and was sitting in her living room looking out her front window, and there was a great big beautiful tree in her front yard. And after she'd been sitting there struggling with herself for a few minutes, she thought, well, they told me I could choose anything I wanted for a higher power. I'll choose that tree because I can't make a tree. And she said for a long time after that, she sat there and poured out her heart to that tree. And after 2 or 3 years, she had to move. And she said, the tree stayed there, but God went with me. And I think that's probably how we do find a higher power in this program, if we have lost one or do not have one.
But okay. Thank you, Elton. Chuck, you want me to reread it, or you got it?
Reread it.
Why is it necessary to find a higher power of our own?
I didn't answer that question.
Well, I am Chuck C., and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Chuck.
It was necessary for me to find a higher power because I had lost the battle of life twice over. Says that in step one, you know. We're powerless over alcohol, physical. We can't manage our own lives, mental. So I've lost the battle twice over, step one. Step two, I'm nuts. Said we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I submit to you that there's an implication here. Sane people don't need to be restored to sanity. So I'm nuts. And I've already been to human power. To the doctors, God bless them. To the priests, the preachers, and the psychiatrists, God bless them. And no help. So it was necessary to have a power greater than myself because I had lost the worst. I needed it very badly. And so, I think we all do. If I could have beaten this rap alone, I wouldn't be a member of this leper colony. That's it.
Thank you, Chuck. The next one, do you have a good answer to the newcomer when he asks, what do you do to occupy your time when you stop going to bars and places that sell alcohol?
That's yours.
When I was drinking and considering maybe not drinking, I couldn't imagine life, because everybody that I knew in all the activities of my life were drinking people. And it didn't seem to me that there'd be any possibility to live in a sort of a vacuum, you know. You've got no liquor, and you got nobody to talk to, because they're all alcoholics or drinkers. So I was very reluctant to think that there would be any thing like a good life without drinking. But when it came time that I had to be here or else, I discovered that there ain't enough time. You just don't have enough time. I've been around this program a long time, and I haven't got any time. It's difficult for me to work up enough time to get my hair cut. So, if you stick around, and if you do the things that the program suggests that you do, if you get and then give away, you won't have any time to spare at all. They keep you busy.
Thank you, Chuck. This question is applicable to both AA and Al-Anon. What can be done to encourage more participation in service work, especially state office?
I don't think there's an awful lot that can be done. I've heard Chuck say so many times that if anyone wants the job, they shouldn't have it. It's usually the people that don't want it that usually have to get in and do it. I think the only thing that we can do to encourage people into third legacy work, either in the state or in the nation, is to get them to see how much they can get out of it, how much it will give back, because the experience is so terrific. I've done a little of that work myself, and I know what the results can be, because then you are able for the first time to see the big picture. Chuck and I have been most fortunate in attending AA and Al-Anon meetings practically all over the world, and to see this same identical program with the same literature and the same ideas and the same answers all everywhere we go is one of the most encouraging things I think that can happen to us. And to, if you can somehow or other get people to see what this will mean in enlarging your own perception, your own understanding, your own ability to meet people all over the place, and to get acquainted, and to do your little share in this wonderful work. When there is some enthusiasm shown for it, then maybe people will be willing to do something about it.
I think involvement is something that you can't very well teach. I guess the example is about the only thing that you can furnish for this kind of thing. Involvement is the thing that is the difference between a full and an empty life. Involvement. And I think it's very necessary that we try our, in our coffee cup conversations, to get our people to go into the history of our fellowship. You see, when we know the story of our beginning, it's something that is so illuminating, because we see that if there'd have been any way for us to wreck this deal, we would have wrecked it. You know. You can't know the history without seeing the finger of God right straight through it. And it's something that creates a great love within you for not only the fellowship that we have now, but for the entire fellowship, the founders, a love that makes us get in there and do something about it. And that's what service work is. It's love for our society and our need to share it. Caring and sharing is our society, you know. That's what makes it. And we're missing one of the great blessings of the society when we duck this kind of involvement. It's a great thing. And it's something that, again, carries more personal satisfaction than pretty nearly anything that we can do. It's a big, big thing that we belong to. And it's a big thing to be involved in. That's all.
This one here for Elsa. How can the Al-Anon be supportive and not manipulate it to her spouse? Some idea of gifts, please.
Oh, tain't easy, I'll tell you that. Manipulation was one of my first names during the drinking years. It took me a long time in Al-Anon to learn not to try to manipulate. I catch myself every once in a while, even today, trying it. I think it comes naturally to those of us who are living with alcoholics, because during the drinking years, it seemed to be the only way we could get anything accomplished was by manipulation. Because if they knew exactly what we were doing, they'd run the other way, because I found that an alcoholic works by opposites. And if you're pushing at all, they will go the opposite direction. And it isn't an easy thing to take your hands off of the alcoholic's life and realize that we have no right there, really. That what we need to do and what we're coming to Al-Anon to accomplish, if we can, is to take our eye off the alcoholic and turn around and take a really good look at ourselves and see what makes us tick and what we need to get rid of. And in order to be at peace with ourselves and enjoy and to be able to learn how to live pretty comfortably, whether the alcoholic is drinking or not. And when we do that, somehow or other, my experience has been, and I've been around a long, long time, in watching other people, that when we can and do let go completely of that terrible necessity to force the alcoholic to perform the way we think they should, that something usually happens And I know from my own experience that the only way we can help an alcoholic is by example. There is no other way that I know of. But the importance of getting ourselves straightened out, because if you're as nutty as I was, there was a lot of work to be done, believe me. And I haven't gotten there yet, but I'm on the way, let us put it that way. Thank you.
Thank you, Elton. Here's one from Pete Duggan. What are your feelings on excessive profanity?
That's a good help.